There's a twist, though. Fucking hacks and their twists. Next day, Ray does his research. He realizes that I withheld the video and he fires me. And that's why I came up here, my friend. I couldn't let anything happen to you. Maybe his heart is bigger than I thought. You're my only source of income until I sell Johnny Bates. He's lucky I'm tied to this tree. And I summon the last of my fucking empathy and thank him again, and he goes back to saving me. Finish the job, you prick. And describing his male lead as if that's what the world needs. Another sociopath on TV. And he says that Johnny Bates is mysterious and well-read, but a little rough around the edges. Finally, Oliver gets the top rope, but my body lurches back. My muscles are broken from ping pong, and I lose my balance, and again he has to save me from falling. Again, I have to thank him. You okay, my friend? No, I'm not okay. I got shot in the head and hit on the head, and now this fucker is twisting my life into some gleaming, steaming pile of shit for TV. I'm good. Just really need to rest. Oliver shuts up about his shit show. And he's getting better with that knife. And now my legs are free. Hari Oliver, hallelujah. And he clips the zip ties and I have hands again. 2 feet instead of one stump. I am dizzy and the car is not close. And he says we can't think about leaving until we clean things up. Come on, he says. It's not as bad as that dungeon in your house. My whisper room is not a dungeon, and I'm too weak to help him, and he tells me to take a bath, and did you fuck Shortus in this tub? I don't know. I don't care. I bathe, and Oliver scrubs the floors, periodically interrupting his flow to tell me about his TV show, and finally I am clean, and the crime scene is clean, and we are on foot, walking, limping. So, he says. You want to come back to L.A. and help me on the show? Ray says he blackballed me, but my agent says he's full of shit.
No thanks.
Really? I'm offering you ground floor access, my friend.
Access to what doesn't exist is access to nothing, and I shake my head. Gonna stay here.
Well, ultimately, I suppose that's best for both of us. Ray doesn't want you in L.A., and this way, well, hey. If Johnny Bates gets a third season, maybe we shoot up here.
I can't think of anything to say that he won't interpret as an insult. He stops walking and he huffs and he puffs and he obviously misread my silence. We should be walking, Mary Kay. Animals in these woods don't stop to chat, but Oliver's too fucking arrogant, human in the worst possible way, having just killed a fellow man.
Listen. He says. You took a hit back there.
You think?
But you gotta let that shit go, Goldberg. You've gotta see the error of your ways.
I will punch him.
The what? Hear me out, my friend. You moved up here to get soft, and you did get soft.
I hate that he has a point, but he does. I didn't see it coming with R.I.P. Shortus.
It's like my agent said about my draft.
Say the word agent one more time, asshole.
There is such a thing as too soft, my friend. You can rock down to Menopause Avenue and spend every day in a library, but humans are what they are. And if you want something, you have to go hard, my friend. Always.
I let Oliver high-five me, and soon we're in his Escalade. We're on the way back to civilization, passing the casino. The tiny bridge that moves us from the mainland to Bainbridge. Oliver is on the phone with his agent's assistant.
I got a new scene for the pilot.
And my friend is a sicko. But he's a sicko who saved my life. I thank him again, excessively, considering his ineptitude with the knife. And he's on his phone again, probably searching for some how to make people think you can write article. And he tells me that we did it.
We got out, my friend. Love? I'm sorry about that.
No, he isn't.
But she can't mess with your head anymore, and okay, so I no longer work for that family, but when my show goes into production...
Oh, Oliver, my friend, do you really think that's gonna happen?
Well, I'll be making more money. In the meantime, though...
My phone pings, and it's a link to a 1983 Smith Corona typewriter on first fucking dibs.
I know,
he says.
But I gotta tell you, Joe, ever since I got back to writing, my mom's doing better. She says she never wanted to say anything, but she felt like I gave up, and she feels stronger knowing that I'm back at it. We gotta go hard, my friend. That's the only way for the Poor Boys Club to succeed.
There's nothing more annoying than good advice from someone who makes a lot of bad decisions. And we're silent until Oliver drops me in the driveway. Goodbye, Oliver. And hello to my empty houses. You and the meerkat are still not in your guest house, and I take another shower. I still smell bunny blood. And I put on my black cashmere sweater, and I go into my kitchen and stand before my chopping block of Rachel Ray's. I choose a smaller knife, the sharpest one I have, and I slip the knife into a book. And Oliver is right, Mary Kay. It's time to go hard. Chapter 47. I pop a Percocet, just one half this time, and Oliver has to win over so many motherfuckers if he wants Johnny Bates to make it into American homes. He's my friend, in a way, and I really will cross my fingers for him, but I won't hold my breath. That business isn't so different from dealing with the Quins. He's gotta go hard when they tell him to go hard. And then when they tell him it's too hard, he's gotta go soft. And when they send him notes and tell him they have no idea what he was thinking, that Johnny Bates is way too soft, he's gotta suck it up and tell them how smart they are. It's not an easy way of life, and me, I only have to kill it in one room, with one woman. You. I catch a ferry to Seattle, and I do what I need to do, and I catch another ferry back to Bainbridge, and I go home. I get my car, but I don't park at the library. Too close, and not close, as in closer. And I pull my hat down the way people do sometimes, when you need to leave the house, but you don't fucking feel like talking to anyone. I'm too nervous, what with Rachel Ray up my sleeve. About to go where she's never gone before. Can I do this? Can I really do this? I cut through the woods, and I'm in the gardens by the library, crouching. The windows need to be washed, but I see you in there. You're being you. I'm nervous, and I can't risk you seeing me, so I carry on through the woods, into the back parking lot. I might vomit. The half a Percocet. The adrenaline. The pain pong.
Hi, Joe.
It's the meerkat, and she's on the move, and she doesn't stop to talk.
Bye, Joe.
She zooms by into the library, and her Instagram said she was in Seattle, and I brought Rachel Ray here for us, for you and me, and now she knows I'm here. Fuck. And will she tell you? I duck my head and take the path down the steps into the garden, and the cupola is empty. Thank God, and I move like a mechanic, like Mick fucking Jagger, maneuvering my broken body onto the ground, sliding my upper body under the love seat. I wanted to do this the right way, with spray paint, but then other people would see, and the paint would bleed everywhere, so it's just not realistic, is it? I take the knife out of my sleeve, and I start to go to work. It's a slow go. I have empathy for Oliver because knives aren't easy, and at this rate, I'm never going to finish. I've never carved initials into a tree. I don't even know if you'll be moved by this because, yes, you love the graffiti at Fort Ward, but will you love the fact that I carved our initials into the underbelly of a love seat that's property of the Bainbridge Public Library? Will you even be able to read my shitty knife writing?
What you doing?
I flinch and drop my knife, and the meerkat needs to be less caffeinated, less nosy.
There's a loose screw, I say.
I'm just fixing it so nobody gets hurt. Can you give me a minute?
I can give you a million minutes,
she says, and then she's gone. Clomp, clomp, clomp. I have to move fast because the meerkat isn't stupid, and I am defacing public property for my own private purposes. And this is only part one of Operation Go Hard, and I have to make it to part two, the harder part of going hard. The door opens. It's you.
Okay,
you say.
Please don't make me have to tell you to stop vandalizing our property.
The fucking meerkat ratted me out, and I'm not done yet, and I had a plan. I was gonna lay down a red blanket and play One by U2, our first fuck, and you were gonna lie down and see our initials, and life isn't what happens when you're making plans. It's what happens when you get a fucking head injury and turn into a sappy dork. You say my name again.
Joe, come on, stop.
I pocket my knife and bang my head as I worm my way out from under the love seat. I am standing, dizzy, my poor head. You just sigh.
I told you, there's nothing to talk about. Go home.
Wait. You don't move. Do I get down on my knees? No, I don't get down on my knees. That's not us. I sit on the bench. I don't ask you to join me, but you do. You put your hands on your elbows. You were right, I say.
About what?
You told me that it's not in my nature to love.
I was mad, and I told you I was sorry. Can we not do this?
Yes, I say. We can absolutely not do this. I can go home, I can put my house on the market, and I can move. And you can go back inside and pretend I don't exist.
Joe!
It's not in my nature to love, Mary Kay. And the truth hurts. And you have every reason to pretend I don't exist, because you're absolutely right. My note to you was generic and vague. I disappeared on you. And my letter wasn't just vague. It was bullshit, because you can't open up to someone without opening up all the way, and I didn't do that. I got scared. I ran. No excuses.
Can I go now?
Did I walk out on you when you told me about Phil?
Are you trying to tell me that you're married too?
Believe me, Mary Kay, I thought about running scared. The man was a rock star. I was intimidated. I was never intimidated by that fucking rat, but certain situations call for certain logic, and it's working. You're listening. The windows of your empathy bordello are opening, and you're letting me back in a little. Mary Kay, I promise, I'll never chicken out on you again. I know I ran away. You say nothing, and of course you say nothing. A liar can't promise that he'll never lie again. You say you should probably go back in, and I tell you to wait, and you throw up your hands.
I did wait. I waited all day for you to call.
I did call.
Not when you got off the plane.
I got mugged.
Oh, do you expect me to believe that you got mugged at the airport? What, Joe, you got shot at the Starbucks in LAX?
I flew into Burbank.
I don't care. It's too late.
Mary Kay, I told you. You're right. I fucked up, and I don't blame you for icing me out that day and all the days after. You had every right to do that.
You should go.
No, I say. I have to tell you something about me. I have no plan, and I'm not a pantser. I am a planner, but I'm not going to win you back with schmaltz. You want me to be vulnerable, and you want some fucking facts, and I have to tell you everything without telling you everything. Okay, look, I begin. I went to this school shrink when I was a kid. She talked about object permanence. How babies, if you show them an apple, they see the apple, and if you cover the apple with a box, they forget the apple was there. They forget the apple exists because it doesn't exist to them when they can't see it.
I'm familiar with the concept of object permanence.
I did lie to you, Mary Kay. On our first date, I glossed over my relationships. It's true. I wanted to come off like Mr. Independent, Mr. Evolved. God, it feels good to speak the truth. But in reality, I moved here because I let my ex walk all over me. more like stampede. I let her treat me like a doormat. And I know it sounds macho and stupid, but I thought it might turn you off if I told you about what a sucker I'd been.
Joe.
See, I thought, here's my fresh start. If I don't tell you about Lauren, I can't say Love's real name because the story online is a lie. She didn't die of cancer, and I'm caught in her family's web of lies. I thought that if I didn't tell you that Lauren existed, I would feel like she never existed. Like that guy I was when I was with her, like he never existed either. You pick at the splintered wood.
So you ran back to your ex, and you referred to it as a family emergency, which tells me that she still very much exists to you.
I know, I say.
Fucking stupid, inexcusable, and if I could go back to that night, I would wake you up and tell you about Lauren. I would tell you that she just called threatening to commit suicide. I would tell you that I hate myself for not telling you sooner, for not blocking her number. But I would also tell you that I never blocked her number because I have empathy for her. The woman has no one. Except you.
Not anymore, Mary Kay. R.I.P. Love. My empathy got the best of me, but I cut the cord.
Well, that's nifty.
Listen to me. I saw her. Truth. She was on the verge of taking her own life. More truth. But now it's over. She's with her brother, the only person she really ever loved, and I blocked her number. This is the end of the line for us. Whoever said that the truth just sounds different was right. You're taking it all in. And I really won't be hearing from R.I.P. Love Sick anymore. She was never the same after she lost her brother. And if there's a heaven, she's with him. And if not, well, she can't hurt me anymore. More importantly, she can't hurt my fucking son. You wave at my wounds.
Did her brother do this to you?
No, I say, getting off on all this delicious, cathartic truth. But I'm happy it happened. You sigh, and that was too fillish, and I correct. I mean that it was a wake-up call about what a hypocrite I've been, hiding the ugliness of what it was like with Lauren, as if anyone can just erase their past, sneaking out on you with that stupid half-assed note. This gunshot, this beating, it was the universe telling me that playing the hero for Lauren, swooping in to save her, well, you can't call yourself a hero if you're lying to someone you love. I won't make that mistake again, Mary Kay. I mean that, not with you, not with anyone. I take the ring out of my pocket. No YouTube-style show, no flowers. No string section rounding the corner to serenade us with you two. I just put it on my middle finger. I got this on first dibs.
Oh,
you say.
Well, that's nice.
It made me think about why I ran away. What rings are for people. Because some of us, we don't ever learn about object permanence. Not really. I mean, I was with that shrink because I refused to leave my jacket and my backpack and my locker because I thought if I couldn't see them at all times, they'd be gone.
Are you asking me why I didn't wear a ring when I was... when Phil was alive?
I closed my hand around the ring. Yes.
Well, I don't have one. I lost it when I was pregnant.
How?
I lost it at the beach.
You scratch your elbows.
He was never home. Anyway, he finished Moan and Groan, all these songs where he's complaining about me and the baby ruining his life. The album explodes, and he was so happy, and I was so lonely. I was pregnant. I had homework. Everyone acted like I should be different. Oh, you're still getting your master's?
You ball up your fists.
Nomi was born. He bought me a new ring. I told him I lost that one, too. I was lying. I just hid it in the attic. But I thought I was doing a nice thing. I thought he might get a song out of it. Two lost rings. Anyway, a couple years later, Nomi must have been about 3, Phil goes up to the attic. He found the ring, the one I said I lost. He didn't yell at me. He didn't cry. He left it on my pillow, and I know what you mean. You're just as evil as me.
You're not evil, Mary Kay.
I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Good. Good.
I loved not telling you about Phil. I got off on the danger, the reality that you might find out and hate me. It was a game. And I finally got to be the horrible woman that everyone around here secretly thought I was.
It's not your fault that I was stupid. We've been through this. It's on me, too. You smirk, and I see this new side of you. Haughty. All velvet ropes. And there's no one in the room, but you and I want in.
Joe?
You simper.
You're earnest, and I'm not sure that I'm even a whole person. Sometimes I think that everything I do and say, it's all a reaction to what everyone thinks about me. She thinks she's hot stuff because of one album. Her poor husband was right. She dragged him down just like he said she would. And she won't even wear a ring. If she had any dignity, she'd leave him and maybe then he'd write good music. She acts like she's some kind of saint, keeping him on the wagon, but the man is miserable. And she just walks around that library pretending to be some independent woman. What a joke. What a lie. Who does she think she's fooling? What is she looking for? When's it ever going to be enough for her?
Now, I say. This is enough. You don't scare me with this not-a-whole-person bullshit either. Good try, though. You almost had me. Almost. It's time to go hard, but not too hard. Soft, but not too soft. I open my fist, and the ring is right there. You spent your entire adult life pulling Phil out of the quicksand of stardom. I won't ask you to marry me. You know what the ring means. I go soft so that you can go hard. Please, please, please. And finally, you pick up the ring and slide it onto your finger. And your face lights up, and you are the star. My star.
Okay,
you say.
I get it now. You really do exist.
I really do exist. And I really did fuck up. But I learned my lesson, Mary Kay, because we're in the same boat. I never thought a woman like you existed either. You look at me.
And I do.
Yes, you do. When we kiss, the meerkat hollers. And we look into the library, and she's there with a few of the mothballs and a couple patrons, and they couldn't hear us talking, but they were watching. Everyone loves a proposal, even one as simple and ass backwards as ours, and you're laughing.
Well, I guess I can't take it off now.
I kiss your hand. Never. The meerkat bursts through the door and she hugs you. She hugs me. And there is clapping, so much clapping. And a mothball brings a bottle of fake champagne outside. And I should be in pain. I was shot in the head. Love tried to kill me and Seamus tried to kill me. But your hand is latched onto mine and you are showing off your ring. And the meerkat is putting us on Instagram. And this is it. My happy fucking ending. My happy fucking beginning.
Know me?
You say.
What are you doing under there?
She's on her back, under the love seat, taking a picture of my vandalism.
Reading?
She says.
I think he was trying to carve his initials.
I love you,
you say.
But don't fuck with my library, okay?
I went hard and you went hard and now we're going to go hard together. It's a deal, I say. I will be good to you and your library, especially that big red bed inside. It was just dirty enough and you wink at me, my fox, my fiance fucking A. Chapter 48. It's been 4 weeks and 16 days, and the love songs were telling the truth. When it's real, it's real. And this is real, Mary Kay. You never take off your ring, and commitment agrees with us. We worked hard to get here. We sacrificed a lot. Your friend Shortest died in a hunting accident. Well done, Oliver. And I don't care if you slept with him in his stupid cabin. He's gone. I'm here. And we ran in the 5K to honor that racist, diseased little man. And then we took a shower together, and you didn't fall off the edge of the sidewalk in despair. You climb into bed with me, and you hug me. Promise me you won't take up hunting? It's almost like you know that my life was plagued with violence for so long. I promise. Everything is different now. Fecal-eyed Nancy put the moves on me when she was drunk at the pub last week, and I told you right away, and you told me I did the right thing, and we had sex in the bathroom by normal Norman Rockwell's mermaid in the cage, by the shipwrecked sailor, and the naked woman of his scurvy-induced fantasies. And then you decided that maybe you won't start hot yoga with fecal eyes after all, and it's easy to grow apart from people. The toast at Blackbird is good, but it isn't something we can't live without, and it doesn't matter that fecal eyes didn't actually put the moves on me. I don't like her. I don't want her in our life. And it's just better to push her away because I promised I wouldn't kill anyone, and I didn't kill anyone for you, and I want things to stay that way. I want to honor my first vow to you, the one you don't even know about. The meerkat bursts into the room and groans, "Enough with Taylor Swift!" You're the one who keeps playing Lover all the time, and I get where the meerkat is a little sick of it, because love can be repugnant when it's not yours, especially when it involves the woman who birthed you. You do the right thing. You tickle her.
"Never!"
you say, facetiously, and then you promise you'll take the song off the playlist after the big day, and the meerkat snaps her fingers.
"But it is the big day."
"Yes, it is." You smile.
"But the big day's not over yet, honey."
She groans, but she's not really mad, and we're getting married in a matter of hours. Yes, I'm a good stepfather, and I killed the Taylor Swift, and the meerkat is droll.
"Thanks, Joe."
"Anything for you, kiddo." It's Saturday, and there aren't many Saturdays like this left. The meerkat will be away at college soon. Take that, Ivan. And it's the three of us now. We're the family boarding the ferry, and there are no sharks in these waters. I don't ignore you the way your rat did, and the Gilmore girls found their Luke, and we spend the whole day in Seattle. Roaming around, looking at tchotchkes, tchotchkes we don't buy, because I'm here to remind you that they're tchotchkes we don't need. And I love your friends who own the record store, and they love me. They found all the records I was looking for, and that is my wedding gift to you. A jukebox. The old-fashioned kind with actual records. The one that you told me you always pictured in your empathy bordello. You're right, Mary Kay. I do remember everything. And I took a hit from Oliver, first fucking dibs, but I do have a nest egg, and we are making plans for our bookshop, sending each other links to potential locations on Zillow. I still volunteer, and you still work at the library, and the summer days are long, like days in a Sarah Geo book, and sometimes it's a shame that your friends weren't good enough for us, because happiness is contagious. It would be nice if R.I.P. Melanda were here to envy us, if R.I.P. Shortus were here to build us a love seat, if your rat were a big enough man to sit in the audience and force a smile when the love of his life chooses better. Alas, we can't control other people. We can only control ourselves. We're such a good fucking family that I want us to go on Family Feud because we would win. Even if it was just the three of us. Because it was just the three of us. You laughed when I said it last week.
That'll be the day.
But when I went on your computer and looked at your search results, there it was.
How do you get on Family Feud?
I knew it. I knew that once I proposed, we would all be in a better place. We are on the roller coaster now, and there is no jumping off the ride. Our life is the photograph that rich dimwits pay for at the theme park because their memories alone are inadequate. We took the leap of faith, and the coaster was slow to start. Amusement parks are all aging and dangerous. But we took our chances. We boarded, we strapped on our seatbelts, and now our hands are in the air and we are coasting. Our guest house is for guests. Ethan and Blythe can't make it to the wedding because Blythe caught a parasite from a piece of sushi, but there will be guests eventually. I like it better this way. We are nesting, and look what I did for you, Mary Kay. You aren't the town widow who got fucked over by her druggy husband and her sleazy brother-in-law. You're my fiancé. You stashed my guitar in the closet. I don't want to go down that road again, you know? And I do know. I'm not R.I.P. Phil. I don't want to be a rock star. And it's like you texted your semi-friend Aaron, who was vying for Melinda's position in your life. I always heard second marriages were like this. I know we're not married yet, but Jesus! Every day I'm like, oh, so this is how it can be. So yes, bring new guy to the party. Believe in love. I didn't sneak into your phone or invade your privacy. You changed your settings, and when you get a text, the words are right there because for the first time in your adult life, you have nothing to hide from me, from R.I.P. Phil, from anyone. I only look at your back and forths when you leave your phone open on the counter because you have to pee. And a lot of people look in their spouses' phones, Mary Kay. I'm sure you'd do it to me, too, if I were more like you. But I'm me, and you're you. And we're not going to be those unbearable, in-your-face assholes who create a Mr. and Mrs. Joe and Mary Kay Goldberg account. We're not in denial about our individuality. But in a good relationship, you respect your partner's needs. You're a worrier, so you don't need to know that I just blew $5,000 on a vintage tabletop centipede video game formerly owned by a fucking Pizza Hut. You don't need to know that Oliver still didn't sell his show, issues with Johnny Bates' likability, but continues to peddle it around that vile no-good city with his agent. To be me is to be aware of all the mugs of urine in the world, in our house. I know where you keep your diary. Up high in the closet that's yours now, but I haven't opened it once, and I dip my razor in the sudsy sink and the shaving cream clings to the blade. Perfect. I pull my skin and the razor does what razors do. It removes unwanted tiny hairs. I don't want your face to burn when we get in bed together, and all is right in this world, in this home, on this razor blade. And you knock on the doorframe.
I'm just so fucking happy. Is this how it's gonna be?
I dip my razor in the suds, and once again, perfection. Yes, I say. You nod. You wear socks. And I tisk-tisk. My floors are hardwood, slippery. And your floors were different, and you can't wear socks around this house and walk safely, and you are stubborn. Socks are your tights in summer, and you are always stumbling and sliding. I want to protect you. I nag you to wear shoes or go barefoot, but you think you're Tom Cruise in Risky Business. You imitate his famous sliding dance, and I shake my head and tell you what I always tell you when you walk around in socks, that life is risky business. Young lady, I say, you need to put on some shoes. You take a step closer and you are over it.
Are you almost ready?
I like our nagging because it means we are a real family. We're being ourselves. You had PMS last week and I surprised you with OB tampons and you laughed.
Thanks, I think.
And you ate the leftover pizza I was planning to eat for breakfast, and I was annoyed. I told you one pizza wasn't enough for three people. That's TV bullshit when they do that. And you were annoyed.
You try getting PMS every month and see how you deal when your own body turns against you.
And the meerkat was annoyed.
Mom, can you please not talk about your period so much?
And it was fucking awesome. Because it means we're like Seinfeld and company on Festivus. We're airing our grievances instead of letting them boil inside of us. There are weeds in our garden, and they complement the flowers, and that's how I know this is real. The flowers and the weeds. I can't tell them apart, but at the end of the day, I love them all. We're not afraid of Virginia Woolf in this house. When we tousle, it's a fair fight. Clean. You blush. horny like the fiancé that you are, and you tell me that you'll be on the deck, and I breathe you in, and you kiss my cheek, and shaving cream covers your lips, and I wish it was whipped cream. You giggle, dirty. You reach for me with your hand, and the door is wide open, but you are a fox. You like the risk, and this is who we are now. Lovers. You want my hand in your hair, and I do what you want, and there is no reason for you to know about R.I.P. Beck or R.I.P. Candace. Your tongue grazes my shaft, and what we have is real. It's now. You stand, dizzy. I zip up, dizzy. You are bashful, avoiding your own reflection in the mirror, as if what we just did was wrong. You swat me with a washcloth. Bad Joe, good Joe. And I throw up my hands. Guilty. I tell you that you make me feel young, and then I take it back. That was the wrong word, I say. You make me feel better than young. You make me feel old. I always liked the song Golden Years, and I know we're that old, but I get what Bowie meant in a way I never did before. You like that, and you laugh.
Fun fact. You say, when Phil proposed, I was sleeping.
I'm used to this by now. When I make a rock and roll reference, you respond by talking about your rockin' R.I.P. husband. And it's good, Mary Kay, it's healthy. You're remembering all the little things that made him fallible because nothing compares to me, and I fucking love it when you see the light. I'm excited for the rest of our lives, and I grin. No.
Oh, yes, you say. He put the ring on my finger and left the house, and it took me a long time to notice it, and he was so mad.
I do not speak ill of the dead, but wedding days are like this. You reflect. I kiss your forehead. I love you. You lean your head into my chest.
Yes, you most certainly do, Joe.
And then you smack me on the ass and remind me that we have 50 people waiting downstairs, and I salute you. Aye, aye, Hannibal. And then you change your mind and you close the door. Or do you prefer Buster? I lock the door that you closed, and I press my body into yours. I run my hands down your back, and I pull your panties off, and I am on my knees, and who gives a shit about the 50 people outside when I am in here? Closer. As in closest. Chapter 49. It's a shame that R.I.P. Melanda didn't live to see this. Our backyard wedding is just the sort of night she pictured for herself when she read Sarah Geo's Violets of March, and your high school friends are irritating, and the Seattle freeze is on. One asshole showed up in a Sacrifil t-shirt, as if Nomi needed that today. Because this is our wedding, our celebration of our love. The Sacrif asshole pats me on the back.
He'd want her to be happy, he says. But you know, it's still weird for some of us.
The asshole is drunk, but you come to my rescue.
Paul, you say, you look like you're freezing. We put a pile of fleeces by the bar. Why don't you grab one?
He gets the hint, and you save this moment. You save me. You save everything. You kiss me.
We did it.
Yes, we did. You are my conspirator, and you rub your nose into my nose.
And wasn't I right? Isn't it kind of more fun this way?
I tell you that you were right because you were right. We fucked up a little. We didn't get a marriage license yet, but you told me that you want us to make it official in private. After all the pictures and the partying, because in the end, it's nobody's business but ours, after all. You squeeze my ass and whisper in my ear,
if Nancy tries anything funny, I got your back.
Technically, you have my ass. You squeeze harder.
Semantics.
And then you're in circulation, as a bride must be, as loving and warm as you are in the library, only this is our house, our life. Everything is in place now. Brand new Erin truly is the best replacement. She isn't horny and snooty like fecal eyes, and she isn't a toxic fossil from your past like Melanda. It's sad, but ultimately good that R.I.P. Melanda isn't here to take pictures of you and put hearts on the unflattering ones, to call out the music for being problematic. Well, she was just 17. And there's so much love in the air that she might have gotten weak and wound up mercy-fucking R.I.P. Shortis or Uncle Ivan, not that he came. But you don't miss him. You say you'll never forgive him for ignoring the invitation, and if he were here, he'd fall off the wagon and start recruiting Nomi's new friends and that frustrated, fecal-eyed mommy into some new fucking sex ring. I spin you around the tiny dance floor, and you turn a little sad as Golden Years ends. But that's the way of all songs, all weddings. And I wonder whatever happened to Chet and Rose, the newlyweds in the woods where R.I.P. Beck went to sleep. I kiss you gently. What's wrong?
I'm okay. It'll pass. Just a little emotional right now.
I kiss your hand. I know.
It's weird without my core people.
Rotten to the core, all of them.
And at the same time, I'm remembering why I lost touch with half these people.
Atta girl, and I kiss you, and we don't need to start having game night as you've threatened every now and then.
It's strange,
you say.
But in a good way, you know?
Whitney Houston comes to our rescue, and you want to dance, and it's not easy to dance. The floor is small. My yard is small. Boring third-tier friends form a messy circle around us. We are Chet and Rose, and it's us in the center. These people aren't our people. They're warm bodies on a late summer night, and none of them will be popping by tomorrow, not even brand new Aaron. And Nomi taps your shoulder, and we bring her in, and we are that family now. That family everyone else wishes they could be. And then the song ends, and we aren't the center anymore. A slower song begins. Fucking reggae. Somewhere between dancing and not dancing, and it's too crowded, and people are drifting, and the three of us keep dancing, and you ask Nomi if her friends are having a good time, and she shrugs, and I tell her that her friends seem cool, and she laughs. Don't say cool, you sound lame. We have a family chuckle, and it's just as well, because her friends don't really seem all that cool. They're sulking down by the dock like Philistine fangirls who don't want to dance with a bunch of old people. But as we know, friends are important. And Nomi finally got rid of the little round glasses. She's swaying hips I didn't know were there. And she won't be a Columbine virgin forever, and my brain hotwires. I picture my son years from now. A younger me, macking on Nomi in a bar. But he's too young for her now, and he'll be too young for her then, and we are okay. All of us. The reggae fades into shout, and fecal eyes and women from your book club are calling for you.
Mary Kay, come do a shot!
And it's the part of the song where you slowly get down, and what a sight this is. Middle-aged mountain bike people trying to twist. We can have game night, fine, but we won't be having any fucking dance parties, that's for sure. Nomi loses her balance and grabs my shoulder.
So, Melanda texted me yesterday.
Impossible. She's dead. And Shortis told the same fucking lie, and I stumble, but I don't grab the meerkat's shoulder. Oh yeah? How is she? It's the part of the song where we work our way back up, and Nomi's talking about Melanda like she's alive. This is my stepdaughter. This is a child. She's 18, but she's a young 18, and she grew up in a should-have-been-broken home, so I shouldn't be surprised that she's a liar. She lied for the same reason that Shortis lied, because lies make us feel better about ourselves. The meerkat pulls a strand of hair off her face and builds a better world. She tells me that Melanda is so much happier in Minneapolis than she ever was here.
She's still mad at my mom for not having her back.
In Nomi's fantasy, Nomi is the glue, the secret, the one with all the power.
But I get it, and honestly, she does too, because, I mean, that kid was a kid, you know?
I do know, and I nod.
Anyway, mostly she's just really happy about how you helped me get back on track with NYU and stuff.
Well, that's great,
I say, and Billy Joel picked one hell of a time to start singing about loving somebody just the way they are. I stuff my hands in my pockets. I won't slow dance with my fucking stepdaughter. She wears a bra, and those father-daughter Facebook dances are perverse. That's your daughter, you shithead. Alas, Nomi's father was dead when he was alive. The end of the summer, the end of all your fun. And she puts her hands around my neck. She wants to dance, and this is wrong. 18 is too close to 17. But she leaves me no choice. I rest my hands on her hips, and I hit bare skin. But if my hands go lower, they're on her ass. If they go higher, they're on her chest. She looks up at me, and there is moonlight. Are people looking at us? And she smiles.
I owe you.
Don't be ridiculous, I say, and I wish Billy Joel would shut up, and I wish you would come back. You don't owe me anything.
No,
she says.
The only reason I get to go to New York is because you helped me see that Ivan was a jerk.
I lie to her and tell her that Ivan isn't necessarily a bad guy, that good people go through hard times and that life is long, that Ivan will go back to being good. Her smile is too bright, and we need to find this kid a boyfriend or a best friend. These new friends of hers are no good. Two of them are pouring vodka into red plastic cups, and Nomi looks into my eyes. No. And I search for you, but you're busy by the fire pit with your fucking friends. The meerkat has fingers. Who knew? And she runs the tips of those fingers through my hair. I pull away. She clasps her hands. She doubles over. She's laughing at me.
Oh my God, you are so paranoid.
And she's teasing me.
You really do watch too much of that Woody Allen stuff.
And then she turns serious because I am too serious. So I muster a laugh. Sorry.
You just had a bug in your hair. I was pulling it out.
I scratch my head the way you do when someone reminds you that you have one. Thanks.
Don't worry,
she says, stepping back on her way to her bad influence friends.
I won't tell my mom about your little freak out. I'm not stupid.
None of our wedding guests saw what happened, and maybe that's because nothing happened. I fix a drink, I am of age, and I search the air around me for bugs, gnats, fruit flies, anything. I see nothing. And then you are here, by my side, following my sight line into the abyss.
We really hit the jackpot, huh? No rain.
You make everything better, and you stare at the stars above and you sigh.
I saw you dancing with Nomi,
you say.
That really made me happy. That's when it all kind of hit me, Buster. We did it. We really did.
We all know the rules. If you see something, say something. You saw us dancing and you saw nothing, and this is the good part of my life, so I go with it. I go where you go because I can, because I have to. Yep, I say. It made me happy too. Chapter 50. Better safe than sorry, and I am playing Centipede, just like Oliver and Minka. I play alone, you don't know about my game, and I am winning. The goal is simple. Do not be alone with Nomi. Kill that centipede every time it appears on screen. Except in this game, I don't kill her. It's in her nature to want to be with me, and there are bugs. She might have been trying to take a bug out of my hair. But you just never know, do you? And the centipede isn't evil, and we're all just prone to root for the soldier, the player, because the centipede is presented as the enemy. I am like you, a future co-founder of the Empathy Bordello, and I am able to see things from Nomi's perspective. She lost her father. Her uncle's a motherfucker. Her fake uncle died in a hunting accident and proceeded to be torn apart by wild animals, and now she has a stepfather. It's confusing stuff, and the centipede is on a mission to get close to me, and it is my duty to do what is best for the centipede, to stay the fuck away from her. This is no way to live. being endangered in my own house, but in 4 days she goes to New York, and that means no more fucking centipede. At least not until the real centipede arrives, the two-player tabletop I bought for us. You walk into the kitchen and I pour coffee into your mug and you say you don't have time for that. You have to catch the ferry. Aaron is meeting you in Seattle to see a designer. I push the coffee across the table. Oh, come on, I beckon. You can do that later. Stay home. You sip the coffee.
You are a very bad man, Joe.
I smile. Yes, I am. If Nomi didn't live here, just 4 days and 3 nights to go, I would pull your skirt off and bend you over the counter, but Nomi does live here, and she's here now, rummaging in the fridge for a Red Bull. You nag her about her beverage choice.
That will poison your brain,
and she barks defensively.
It's no different than coffee.
And I play my video game, casually moving my position so that I am on the opposite side of the room from Nomi. You don't know about my centipede score. You haven't noticed a change in my behavior since she touched my hair. But I am the top scorer in the game, and I have not been alone or within touching distance of your daughter once in the past 4 days. When you yawn and say you have to go to bed, I follow. When the centipede, not a meerkat, not anymore, pops by the library and sees me packing up and asks if I want to walk home, I tell her that I have to go to Seattle to see about a book. When I am outside flipping steaks on the grill, no more lamb shanks for us, and you are inside chopping vegetables and the centipede opens the door and asks if I need help, I smile, polite, and tell her I'm all set. The meerkat has daddy issues, and because I am such a good stepfather, I don't want her to find another bug in my hair. I don't want her to beat herself up for anything when she's in New York starting over. You peck me on the cheek, and Nomi is in this house, and you are leaving this house, and I have to stop you. Wait, I say. You're leaving now? Nomi laughs.
You guys are so gross.
You tell me you have to get the ferry, and the centipede hops up on the counter, and she is wearing shorts, and her legs dangle, and I tell you I want you to stay, and Nomi groans again.
I can't take this anymore, she says. I'm going to the beach with Anna and Jordan, and please don't bug me about dinner later.
That's what happens in video games sometimes. The enemy appears on screen, and you're out of position. You can't evade the bullets, but then it slips off screen, and you worried for nothing. You feel my forehead. Such a mother.
Are you okay? You look a little red.
I pull you in because I can do that now that the centipede is outside, game over, stuffing a towel in her bag.
Bye, guys,
she calls from the driveway. Come on, I plead. We have the whole house to ourselves. You can see the designer any old day. You kiss me, but it's a kiss goodbye.
Aaron's waiting for me, Buster. So come on, let me go. In 4 days, this is how it'll be every day.
In 4 days, a bomb might go off and we might all be dead. You sling your purse over your shoulder.
And I think I'm the paranoid one.
I try once more. I put your hand on my dick. Come on, Hannibal. Your eyes are two foxes. They have teeth sharper than mine.
No,
you say.
And honestly, can we cool it with the Hannibal stuff?
That hurts my feelings. But in any relationship, there is growth, and I'm not a fucking nickname person anyway. Whatever you want, Mary Kay DeMarco. You walk to the door and blow me a kiss.
Be good.
I blow you a kiss. See you in 20 minutes when you change your mind. Your eyes land on the sofa and you fight a horny smile and you love me, but you leave me and I sit on our in-house red bed and I turn on the TV. Everything is fine. I'm catching up on Succession. You were right, it is good. And there's a nickname that you do like, Ken Doll. But I can't focus. I need to zone out, so I turn on Family Feud. I'm not paranoid, but this is a challenge for me. Things are working out for the first time in my life, and sometimes I think about New York or I think about L.A., and I hear Amy Mann in Magnolia warning me that getting everything you want can be unbearable. I am so used to never getting what I want that I don't quite know how to sit on my sofa and be a basic Bainbridge hubby in khaki shorts killing time while his almost wife, it will be courthouse official on 8-8, you like that date, searches for curtains and my stepdaughter hits the beach with her friends. The door opens and I turn off the TV. You knew I needed you today, and you're here, kicking off your shoes in the foyer. Did you miss me, Mary Kay soon-to-be Goldberg? I look up from the red pillow I just moved to make room for you, and it isn't you. It's the centipede, and this is a new level in the game, a dangerous level, and she pulls a can of spiked seltzer out of the fridge, and she's 18 years old, and it's 11 a.m. She closes the fridge with one hip and shakes the can before she pops it. She giggles.
Finally, right? My God, I was going crazy.
I clutch my pillow, my armor. Nomi, you shouldn't be drinking. She jumps on the couch, and I get off the couch, and she is the centipede, on her side now, legs for days. And who knew she had legs, and what is she doing? She's sipping her spiked soda. Spikes on a dark road at night, spikes that flatten tires, and she's propping her head on a red pillow.
Whatever, she says. These things have, like, no alcohol. Don't worry, I won't be drunk or anything.
I hold my red bed, red pillow, and the centipede isn't moving with her body, but she is moving in other ways. Running her hand over her collarbone, and the collarbone isn't yours, but it is. It came from inside your body.
Joe,
she says.
Relax, she's gone.
She takes a sip, and fuck you, Woody Allen. You did this. You. She's a virgin, isn't she? She isn't old enough to know what she wants, but she says that I know what she wants, and she licks her lips.
Seriously, she and Aaron, they live for stuff like this. Shopping for curtains.
She sighs. Nomi, you shouldn't be drinking.
And you shouldn't be getting married. Jesus, Joe. We were set.
The centipede broadsides me from afar, and I lose a life and stutter, there is no we. She laughs, and did she always laugh that way?
I get it,
she says.
You do things the hard way. We were so close.
Close as in, the centipede is winning.
Mom was all set to be a brother fucker and go off with Ivan.
No, you were not.
But you go and bring him down.
No, I didn't.
And then you go hunting with my ex-boyfriend. He told me he was gonna teach you a lesson for trying to steal me away, like it's not my choice. Such a jerk.
The game table flies into the air, and I duck for cover. She said ex-boyfriend, and it was her in the woods with Seamus, not you. Know me. He wasn't pining for you, and he was a pedophile, and he thought I was a pedophile, same way R.I.P. Melanda thought I was a pedophile, and I am not a pedophile. The centipede isn't alone anymore. There are bombs falling from the top of the screen, and my control panel is stuck. Does she know about the bunnies and the buckets of fucking blood? And I want to punch the console and scream. You? And Seamus? She shakes like her body is covered in ants, and she screeches.
Don't remind me. I know. He wasn't exactly smart. He barely read. But don't be a dick about it. I was young.
You are young. She blinks, and I wish she still wore those unflattering little round glasses.
He could be sweet, though. Like driving to Seattle to pick me up from Peggy and Don's to take me to his cabin. I don't think I would have gotten through high school without those weekends.
The cabin. The girls weren't 20 fucking two, like you said, Mary Kay. The girls were Nomi, and I beg her to stop, and she sighs.
Don't be that way, Joe. Don't be jealous. The cabin was freaking boring, and it's not like I was ever in love with him.
Nomi, please, stop it.
But kids here, they're like kids everywhere. They suck. Seamus was just... I mean, one day I was bored hanging out by the creek near my old middle school, and there he was.
CrossFit is across the street from that fucking middle school, and I snap. He's a rapist. Now she sits up.
You stop it. Nobody raped me, Joe.
It's called statutory rape, and it's wrong. She crosses her arms, all 100 of them.
Oh, really, Mr. Morals? Mr. Hiding in the Woods watching me?
I was not watching you.
Right,
she says.
You just happened to be there with all the time in the world to take this long, leisurely walk to the grocery store with me.
The screen turns from orange to green, and I am dying. I did that, but I didn't. Nomi, please, that's not what that was about.
Now you're going to tell me that you didn't push me to watch your favorite movie?
I hate that this is true. I did that. I pushed a teenage girl on Woody fucking Allen, and I am one soldier, and she is a reptile on fire.
Come on. You were worried that I was one of Melinda's little pawns. So freaking cute. You actually believed that I never saw a Woody Allen movie. I mean, I live on a rock, but I don't live under a rock. And I know when someone is watching me.
I was not watching you.
Right,
she says.
Same way you didn't literally go to my house in the middle of the day when I was cutting school?
I was dropping off a book. It is true, and it isn't, and the centipede moves swiftly.
Nope, she says. You were waiting for me, and you didn't rat me out to my mom, which is how I really knew we were in this for the long haul.
Nomi, I am sorry that you misinterpreted things, but you are dead wrong.
One word,
she says.
Badoosie.
Badoosie. The only word worse than centipede, and I shoot her down. No.
That whole time you helped me at the library, you were making eyes at me, all nervous about getting caught, and you keep looking to see if my mom noticed. You were so cute, Joe. So cute.
Nomi, I wasn't making eyes at you. I was making eye contact, and there is a difference.
Oh, come on. You can be real with me now. Don't fight it.
Nomi, I'm not fighting anything. You misread things.
Oh, I thought of another one of our little moments. That day you almost ran away. I saw that box in your car, Joe. I knew you were going to leave, but then you saw me.
No.
And you were so cute, worried that I thought of you as one of those old people in the library.
No.
I had no idea that you were so self-conscious about your age, and I promised to be more sensitive.
No, that is not how that went down.
And you stayed.
She clutches her heart.
The absolute sweetest.
The bomb almost hit me that time, and the game is rigged. Nomi, this is all a big misunderstanding, and you've been through a lot, and I'm really... Sorry isn't the word. I'm horrified by what Seamus did to you, but I am not like that. She shrugs.
He didn't do anything to me. I like older guys. You and Seamus like younger girls. Almost all guys like younger girls. There's nothing wrong with that. That girl in New York you went out with? The dead one?
This time, the bomb hits me. The game is over. How the hell does she know about that? I put another quarter in the machine in my mind, and I will fucking win. I tell Nomi that she has PTSD. She lost her father. She isn't thinking clearly. I remind her that I know where she's coming from. I had a rough childhood. I know how hard it is when your parents are fighting, and you don't know who you can count on. And I tell her that we can get her someone to talk to, someone who can help her sort through this mess. But she just smiles, a centipede with eyes.
You remind me of him, you know?
Don't say Woody Allen.
Dylan,
she says.
Dylan Klebold.
Dylan Klebold is a mass murderer, and I am your common-law husband. Why didn't we go to the courthouse today?
You don't just say things. You actually do things. I mean, the way you gave me that Bukowski.
Your mom gave you that. She smiles.
I know. Well done there.
Know me. I am not Seamus. She looks at me and laughs.
Oh, come on, Joe. The way you both hung around my house after my dad died. I mean, it was unbelievable. He wouldn't let me go, and you wouldn't just freaking go for it. And my mom, ugh.
You resented your mother, and she resents you, and a nipple appears under her shirt.
You don't have to be jealous, Joe. I didn't break it off the day I met you, but I mean, he's gone. We're here. Plus, honestly, when I started up with him, I was a whole other person. I was young, so it doesn't even count.
Nomi, you are young, I say again. She grins.
I know.
I missed it. The man was abusing your daughter, and I hear Oliver in my head.
There is such a thing as too soft, my friend.
Cedar Cove rotted my brain and broke my radar, and the meerkat was never a fucking meerkat, and kids grow up faster, fucking Instagram, and they know how to be four different people at once, and I took her little round glasses at face value. I thought she was innocent, and she was just playing innocent, but she is innocent because he was a fucking pedophile. I said the word out loud. Someone has to make this right, and she throws a pillow at me.
Don't use that word.
Nomi, that's the only word there is right now. She's quoting R.I.P. Melanda.
It's not history, it's herstory.
And she talks about Seamus like he was her equal.
He did the salmon egg thing too when he was a kid, and he could be sweet.
And I tell her that's impossible. He was a grown man, Nomi. He had all the power, and what he did was wrong. He should be in fucking jail. She snaps her fingers.
That's why Melanda hated you. I thought she was just jealous as usual, but you're better than this. You can't tell me how I feel. I know you know that.
I tell her she needs to stop, and she balks as if we are lovers at war.
Don't tell me what I need, Mr. Woody Allen's number one fan. Even Seamus knew better than to talk down to me like that.
Seamus was a pervert who tried to kill me, and I am the adult, the stepfather. Nomi, what he did was wrong. She tells me that in a lot of cultures, girls her age have babies, and that I don't get to sit here and take it all back when I've been leading her on since the day we met.
It sucked when you disappeared, but I get it. I know it was too painful for you with me so close but so far away.
No.
And it doesn't matter because you came back. You waited for me in the parking lot of the library, and once again, I told you to stay. I told you not to give up.
She looks at me, and the centipede burns me alive.
And you didn't give up, she says.
Yeah,
the wedding was a little icky, but we both know that you're not going through with my mom's little 8-8 plan. You're not even really married.
I am down to one life now, and she laughs.
Stop being so freaked out. It's me, Joe. It's me.
But then she stops laughing, like the centipede she's become.
I almost forgot, she says. You should have seen your face when I told you Melanda texted me. Another classic.
This is the part of the game where you kill the enemy, and the screen changes colors, and the enemy is reborn stronger, faster. She says she's not stupid. She knows Melanda's gone for good, and I tell her it's not like that. You've been through a lot, and if your mother knew, if she knew that Seamus, that he raped you...
Jesus, will you let it go? We broke up. It's over. And then the idiot went and got himself killed hunting. Honestly, it's not the biggest surprise in the world. He was so depressed about being dumped, he was in no state of mind to be off in the woods, going off about what he was going to do to you.
The centipede is staring at me, slowing down and daring me to move into defensive mode. I am not stupid. I am quiet. Does she know what he did to me? Does she know what Oliver did to him? She crosses her arms again.
don't look at me like that. I know he was spiraling, and he got so pissy about you.
He didn't get pissy. He tried to murder me. She's on her feet. The centipede has feet. And she pulls at my pillow, and I hold on to my pillow, and she picks up her bottomless can of spiked seltzer, a drink designed to appeal to children, to make them feel older than they are. I tell her she has the wrong idea, and this game isn't for me, because even when I win, I lose. The game gets harder. She appreciates me for holding out, waiting for her to graduate, buying time for us, and I can't beat the centipede, can I? She takes the pillow out of my hands and hugs me, and I am numb. Game over. I think fast. Hard. Let her hug me. She won't tell you about this. In 4 days, she'll get on a plane and go to New York and become obsessed with some Dr. Nikki professor type, and you don't need to know about this feud. Shortus is dead. Revenge is impossible. And Cedar Cove damaged your brain, too. You didn't see it either. You were worried about your husband, and there are only so many worries a heart can bear. And I would never judge you for that. I have to let her say what she needs to say so that she can move the fuck on, so that we can move the fuck on. I grab her shoulders. We are close now, so close that I can actually see the innocence in her eyes. She really does love me. And I've been where she is. I have loved people who didn't love me back, and I tell her this will hurt, Jude Law and closer, and my voice is firm. I don't love you, Nomi. And that's okay, because you don't love me. Her teeth chatter inside of her mouth, and her shoulders tremble beneath my hands. And the hardest thing about a centipede is that a centipede is always moving. That's the nightmare of the game. I stay with her as I fire my bullets, because I wish any woman who broke my heart had been so kind with me. Willing to be here for me as I realize that I am not loved. My hands are still on her shoulders when you burst into the room. You kick off your shoes and slip into your cozy socks.
All right,
you say.
You win, Buster. I'm home.
Chapter 51. It's been a few minutes since you walked in on every mother's worst nightmare. And the centipede is curled up in a ball on the sofa, and she is screaming.
He went after me!
And you are screaming.
I can't take this!
And you are in the game too now, but your control pad is compromised because this is too fucking much. You defend me.
Nomi, why are you saying this?
And you defend her.
Joe, don't say anything right now.
And I abide, and the centipede cries, and you cross your arms.
Okay,
you say.
Everyone needs to take it down a notch.
The centipede looks up at you like she wants to be hugged, and you don't hug your daughter. You don't run to the sofa and hold her. You don't believe her, and you don't know about Shortus, and I can't be the one to tell you that she's projecting, and she's in a bad place right now. I don't love her, and she knows it. And she wants you to hate me, and you don't want to hate me, and she picks up her can of spiked seltzer, but the well has finally run dry. She slams the can on the table.
Mom,
she says.
Can we please leave already?
There is only one player in the game, and it's you. You fold your arms.
Nomi, honey, please stop crying. We're not leaving this house, not like this.
There's a foolproof way to make anyone cry. Tell them to stop. She's bawling again now, and I say your name, and you growl at me.
I said stay out of it.
And then you growl at her.
Why the hell are you doing this? Why do you make things up?
Making this up? Mom, I forgot my phone, and I came home, and you saw him trying to kiss me. Are you blind?
Your heart is beating so fast that I can feel it in my heart, and your nostrils flare like R.I.P. Melanda's, and you say it again.
Nomi, why are you making this up?
She rubs her eyes. Part meerkat. Part centipede.
Mom, he kissed me.
I didn't. You don't look at me. You look at her.
Nomi?
Wow,
she says.
You believe him? Nice, Mom. Real nice.
You tell her that you believe you. You trust your gut and you don't think I would do that. I wouldn't. But Seamus did, and your child needs you, but you don't know what I know. And you are blaming the victim, warning her about the danger of making false accusations. And she springs off the sofa, and the meerkat is possessed by a barefoot centipede. She throws her empty can at the wall and calls you a sicko, because what kind of woman believes her fucking boy toy over her daughter? You storm by me, and I don't exist. Not right now. This is your family feud, and I am powerless, locked out of the arcade, and you lash out at her.
Do not speak to me like that. We have to be honest. Oh, she snaps. You want me to be honest? Well, Mom, honestly, I think you're a fucking sham. Most women believe all women, and all you ever do is make excuses for every single piece of shit guy you drag into my life. Stop it, Nomi. Why? He's dead. Dad's dead.
This is why we didn't see the centipede inside the meerkat. Because the meerkat is like me. She stored all her pain deep inside where nobody could see it. You do that for 18 years, you get good at it, and this chasm was always here. It's the reason R.I.P. Phil was filling the blues every night. The meerkat hits below the belt.
You feel sorry for yourself because you're a mother, and for that you can fuck off.
And you hit back.
You make it impossible to be your mother because you talk to me about nothing.
And I sit on the sofa, and all I wanted to do was make you happy and look at you now. You're crying, and she's crying. And you tell her it's not your fault that he's dead, and you were right, but she blasts you.
Like hell it isn't. You fucked his brother.
And you respond to the wrong part of what she said.
Don't talk that way about me.
And you don't look at me because you're ashamed. And there is no shame in our love, and I want you to know it. But I can't go where you go, into your nest with your daughter. I am scared for our family, and I'm supposed to be the father, the man of this house. But that's a patriarchal thought, and R.I.P. Melanda would be right to tell me that it's not about me. It isn't. I moved here to be good. I was good. I didn't kill your cheating husband. I didn't kill your lying best friend. And I didn't kill Seamus, the rapist. But I did make a mistake. I wanted to believe that everyone is like us, good. And in that way, I was naive. You were too, Mary Kay. Your daughter says that you ruined her life, and that makes you cry. And I can't hold you. I can't go to you. And you blow your nose on your sleeve. And you won't allow yourself to look at me, to take the love that you so desperately need. Nomi is crying too.
Nomi?
You say.
Why do you hate me so much?
You are mother and daughter. You stop crying, and so she stops crying, and I remain where I am, wishing I'd turned off Family Feud instead of muting it when I heard you come in. She picks at the hem of her little shirt.
Well, you don't care about me. Honey, how can you say that? You're all I care about. I love you. I see you.
The meerkat is so focused on you that she doesn't point at me to say that you're protecting me and this is good, I hope. This is healing.
You don't see me. You're blind. Know me. What do you think I was doing all the time? All the time? When do you mean? What do you mean?
I remember a line from Veep. When the tall guy running for president gets his followers to chant, "When are you from? When are you from?" I fight tears. It's not my place to cry. That's the last thing you need. And the Veep man was right. We don't come from places. We come from time. From traumatic moments that cannot be undone.
Mom, she says, why do you think I got all those UTIs? No, me, no. Mom, she says, I read Columbine for you. I thought eventually you would force me to go to some shrink, and maybe if I talked to some shrink... No, he told me that you knew. He said moms know it all, and you didn't.
You clamp your hands over your ears like a child, and I know it hurts. That bastard raped your daughter, and you cry as if you are the one who got hurt, because you hurt right now, but she wants you to let her cry, and she's mad at you for that, screaming that it was your fault, that you let Uncle Seamus into your house, that you missed every sign that a good mother would see. I want to tell her to stop, but how do you tell a teenage girl to stop talking when she's saying what she needs to say? She slaps you across the face, and you hold your cheek in your hand, and that was too much, but at the same time, the fucking two of you need to learn once and for all that life is what happens right now, not what happened years ago and cannot be undone. I say her name, like a stepfather. Nomi? She stops moving, and centipedes don't do that. They don't stop. You tell her to go downstairs where the two of you can talk in private, and you think I don't love you anymore, and it's the opposite, Mary Kay. I never loved you more. This is it. This is our empathy bordello, and it's one thing to dream about it, but it's another thing to live in it. And you can't do it right now. I feel it slipping away. New York in November, Thanksgiving. And I don't know how to grab it because you don't know that I know about New York in November, Thanksgiving. You rub your face. It stings where she hit you, and she pats her hand. It too stings. But you didn't like that, and you huff.
So that it then, huh? You blame me for everything? But I got news, honey.
Don't do it, Mary Kay.
The one you should blame for this whole fucking mess is your father.
The centipede is breathing fire.
Stop it, Mom. Stop it. He was supposed to protect you. I said, stop it. Nomi, do you know why your Auntie Melinda really moved? Do you?
No, Mary Kay. Don't go there. She thinks Melinda loves her deep down, and kids need that, and do I barge in? Am I allowed? You cluck.
Well, I'm done protecting your rock and roll father who never did anything wrong, and your perfect little Miss Feminist aunt.
No, Mary Kay, they're gone. You know you should let them rest in peace, but you feel so guilty about missing what happened with Seamus, and you want her to feel sorry for you. I know this game. I do.
Well,
you say,
at some point we all learned that our parents are flawed. Your Auntie Melinda was having an affair with your father, okay? Your father was sleeping with my best friend, so before you go putting them both on pedestals... Well, that's what your beloved father and your beloved aunt did to me.
She says nothing. You say nothing. You know you made a mistake, and you are better than this, smarter than this, and I know that being a mother is the hardest job in the world. R.I.P. Love quit, too. But the meerkat didn't need that right now, and you're about to apologize. I see it in your eyes. But she throws a book at you. A Murakami, and you swerve, and the book hits the wall, and she screams,
I am the child, Mom, me.
You make earmuffs again, and my mother did that too when she was in the weeds. When she got home from work, and I was on the floor watching TV, and I would look up and say hi, and she would wave. No eye contact. I'm beat, Joe. I'm beat. I know where you are. I see you in your mind kicking yourself. You never ripped up Columbine and dragged her to a therapist, and you made nice to Seamus, and this is why you cry. The guilt. You want the meerkat to take care of you, and she wants you to take care of her, and you're crying, she's crying, and you both cry like sharks inside of sharks, deprived of fresh air, freedom. You put your hands on Nomi's shoulders, and she leans her head into yours, and your foreheads are touching.
Nomi, honey, don't worry, I'm not mad at you.
That was the wrong thing to say. And I know it, and Nomi knows it, and she grabs your shoulders, and my floors are hardwood, shiny. You twist like spaghetti, and she hurls you at the wall, and your foot slips, socks, and I'm too slow. I'm too late. You tumble down the stairs, and the meerkat screams, and I freeze up inside, outside. I picture the police report that's coming. Murder weapon. Socks. No. There is no murder, and you are not dead. Time is slow and fast and fast and slow, and Nomi is still screaming, and of course she is screaming. She came home to find her father dead on the floor, and now her mother is out cold. Are you dead? You can't be dead. and Nomi shrieks,
Mommy!
And it's unnatural for a child to see one parent out cold on the floor, let alone two. Your body is in our basement. No, you're not a body, you're a woman, my woman, and I failed to protect you, and my heart is in flames, and you're the love of my life, and you're the love of our life, and Nomi clamps her hands on the banisters. She's on her way down the stairs, but every step is 10 miles long, and why are there so many fucking steps? She stops on the second-to-last step.
She's not moving.
I want to rip Nomi's heart out of her chest. This is too much for her. It is. And I want to rip mine out, too. This is too much for me. It is. She takes one step closer and stands over you. She's afraid to touch you. Afraid to feel your hand for a pulse.
Oh, my God!
She says, and she is wailing. And I know that kind of warbling sound. She thinks she killed you. She thinks the pain is going to kill her, and she thinks there is less love for her in this world than there was 40 seconds ago. I lean over your body and hold your wrist in my hand. Your heart is beating. Nomi, I say. She's alive. I take a deep breath, an end-of-the-book kind of breath, the last book the author wrote before she died kind of breath. I'm calling 911. Nomi nods, but she can't speak, not right now. She's a meerkat again, trembling and scared. The operator picks up and asks me about my emergency, and Nomi screams,
I don't think she's breathing anymore!
And the operator is sending an ambulance, and they will save you, Mary Kay. They have to save you. Not just for me, not just for you, but for Nomi. She thinks this is her fault, and you have to survive so that you can wake up and tell her what she needs to hear, that this is not her fault. You try to love. You try to be good, but ultimately you wear socks on hardwood floors, and Ivan was right. We deserve better, all three of us. Your lips move, and Nomi's desperation transforms into hope, and she feels the pulse on your wrist and looks up at me.
She's alive.
I stay on the phone. I am the adult, and I give my address, our address, and I follow their orders. Don't move her, and I say all the right things to your daughter. It's okay, Nomi, she's gonna be okay. And I hold your hand and whisper all the right things to you as well. You were lost at sea. See the boats go sailing. And my voice is your lighthouse. But I can't say everything I want to say, and I can't give you my full, undivided attention. Your meerkat is too close. It's not what Nomi said.
She's alive!
It's what she didn't say.
Thank God, she's alive.
And was she... Did she want you to be gone? Once I saw her push Luscious off an end table. He landed on his feet, but you... I know, Mary Kay, this is no time for doubts. When you wake up, and you will wake up, it's gonna be you and me against the world. I promise. Your eyelids flutter. I think, I hope, I wish we were alone. And I stroke your hair, and I say it all out loud. I love you, Mary Kay. You fell, I know, but now you're gonna get better. I'm gonna take care of you every day, I promise. You got me, you're my love, I'm here. The meerkat is a centipede. Quiet. Epilogue. I left America. I had to. How much tragedy can a person bear? Okay, so I didn't cross the border, but my new home feels like another country. I live in Florida now. Smack dab in the center, close to the kingdom, yeah, but I'm not close as in closer. I can pretend it doesn't exist. I am alone, safe. And I get it now. I'm better off on the wrong side of the tracks. You were special, Mary Kay. You saw something in me. But in the end... You turned out to be like my past coastal elite loves, too tangled up in your blue roots to pave a new road with me. No more hackneyed American dreams of a love that conquers all for this Florida man. The shop is closed, as they say. And I turn on the lights in the empathy bordello. It's too dark and it's too bright, and I'm trying to move on. Last night I watched a documentary about R.I.P. Sam Cooke. He gets me. And I wanted to know more about his music, but it was mostly just speculation about his murder, as if that's all that matters. I am so sick of this obsession with death, Mary Kay. What about what we do with our lives? Licious meows. His brothers are back on Bainbridge, and you were right. He is the best cat. A baffled king on a perpetual victory march, as if he always just composed Hallelujah. And if you were here, you would say that every suffix needs a prefix, and I miss you, Mary Kay. I do. I wanted to build a life with you, and I did everything right. I was a good man. I volunteered at the library. I opened my heart to you, and I believed that we could be happy in Cedar Cove. But like so many sassy American women who trust their feelings, you spoke your truth and got thrown down the stairs. My heart is broken. Permanently. I can't talk to you, so I play a Sam Cooke song. The one where he's sad about a woman who left him. She broke his heart. She stayed out. She stayed out all night. And he begs her to come home. He offers his forgiveness. You can do that when the person you love is alive. You got pushed. Life does that to us. But you lost your footing and fell down the stairs because you were wearing socks. I warned you, and now you're in a coma and you can't burst into the bordello to tell me you regret leaving me behind. You're like every woman I ever loved. You didn't walk away. You didn't stay out all night. You left the fucking planet. You wanted this bordello before you ever met me, and I wanted us to have Christmas together and leave the lights up all year, and now you can't even see our jukebox. You can't do the most important thing we do as people, evolve. Apologize to your child for being human. For being a mother, for letting empathy make you go blind. I look at my phone just to make sure it's real, and it is. They're pulling the plug tomorrow. Thought you should know. Nomi didn't even call to tell me about you. She texted. And I flip the switch on the pink neon open sign in my bookstore, where I serve cocktails and dreams alone. You didn't help me build the bordello, and I can't blame Nomi for being cold, and I know she'll be fine in the long run. She's not one for empathy. I still see her hovering over you. I still hear those words. She's alive. And it's not her fault, Mary Kay. She's moving on with her life, studying our fucked-up environment at NYU, and young, wounded female victims turned sociopaths thrive in New York City, and I should know. I've been hurt by more than a few of them. I try to stay upbeat. There are people out there who do love me. Ethan might visit, but he would bring Blythe. And here I go again, replaying it all in my head. I loved you like no other. The EMTs arrived and they gave me hope. The United States injustice system cooperated this time around. Cause of injury, accident, and there was no biased investigation, no online crazies trying to blame me for your fall. I tried to be the guy with a girlfriend in a coma. We have that book in stock at the bordello, and I was dutiful. I was there. But every time I went to get a soda, I came back to find one of your friends in my chair by your bed. Aaron disappeared. And Fecal Eye swept in with her multi-generational family of looky-loos, and I know you wouldn't want me sitting there with that woman who brought out the worst in us. I loved you, but my love wasn't enough to save you. Now you sleep in a mechanical bed while a machine does all the heavy lifting. I was the man of your dreams. I didn't think someone like you existed. And you always wanted to dance with somebody who loves you. And I did love you, and we did dance. But from the moment we met, we were stuck in the middle of the circle. Your friends and family were holding us hostage every step of the way because they didn't want you to be happy. And look how that worked out for them. Your best friend Melinda is watching movies at Fort Ward. Your husband Phil is snorting heroin in heaven. Your brother-in-law Ivan is blogging about his new gambling addiction. Your buddy Shortis is in hell doing CrossFit, and your daughter Nomi is alive but motherless. I play our Lemonhead song, and I can't believe I'll never see you again, and I wonder what you would think of the tabletop centipede game by the back wall of the bordello. But I'll never know, will I? Acid shoots through my esophagus, all that leftover love with no place to go. I lug a barrel of empty bottles out back into the dumpster where the air is thick as bread and Florida makes you believe in the ether, the unknown. Sometimes I get paranoid. I picture you haunting me from within like a ghost I can't escape, the shark inside my shark. But there's no such fucking thing as ghosts. I'm getting older, and you're not, and it will take some time to adjust to this living arrangement. The one where you're dead and I'm turning on the TV because the music hurts, but the news helps. Naked Ocala woman urinates on customers at Popeyes. Broward County husband tells police, "My wife called my girlfriend a whore. It was self-defense." Father and son arrested for selling meth at school bake sale. And then an ad for a new show on Fox. Johnny Bates, The Man You Hate to Love. After you fell down the stairs and our family splintered, I thought about going to Ray, trying to get my son back. But I was right about Ray. He has cancer. And if there's one thing I learned from my time with you, it's that Dottie has enough on her plate right now. She's taking care of my son. She opened an Instagram account and I followed her, and she followed me right back and sent me one important message. She doesn't post as much as Love did, but it helps to have an online family museum. And I'm happy my son has more privacy now. I also have a Google alert for Ray Quinn and obituary, and that's a thing that keeps me going. The door of the Empathy Bordello Bar and Bookstore opens, and it's only 11:32, and we're usually dead until noon. Even in these parts, people are shy about morning juice, and I have a customer. She's not a person to me yet. She's a blur in the doorway, and she holds the door open with her hip. She's sending someone a text, and I can't see her face in the white light. The AC is on, and the cool air is pouring out, driving our planet into despair. If I ask her to close the door, I am rude because she's talking to someone, her boyfriend. And if I let her stay there like that, I am complicit in the destruction of this planet, of my heart. She moves her hip, and the door closes, and we're alone in the dark that's not as dark as it seems. My eyes still can't get there, and I'm blinking, squinting, as if your eyes cover my eyes, warping my vision. I want to see this woman. I am alive, and I don't want to see this woman. They all leave me. They leave me behind. But it doesn't matter what I want. Eventually, my muscles adjust. The holes in our faces have free will, and like it or not, I see the world clearly. The woman who just sat down at the bar in my bordello. She says hello, and I say hello, and it defies all logic. I lost everyone I ever loved, everyone. But somehow my heart is intact. It ticks madly, just like hers. This is Santino Fontana. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of You Love Me, a You novel by Caroline Kepnes. This program was directed by October Crafasi, executive producer Kelly Gilday, edited by Stan Bush. Text copyright 2021 by Caroline Kepnes. Production copyright 2021, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.